Good. Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting for December 17th, 2019. It's 5:30 and we are back after a very long hiatus from the days here. Tonight we have a lot of changes going on. We heard that Commissioner Gina Buskirk has resigned. She has an overwhelming work commitment, but we are very thankful that we had the time that we had with her. She served wonderfully. She was the chair before I took this seat, and she will be greatly missed. And so, Gina, if you're listening, thank you. We also have a new commissioner coming on for South Kitsap, Commissioner Ed Galloway. He comes from what is the name of the firm? You know it, Aaron.
Yeah, it's MG2. Used
yep.
to be Mulvaney. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got an architectural background. He's a project manager and designer for that firm. Should bring some very interesting insight into the issues that we grapple with. So those two commissioners are not here. We didn't think that Mr. Galloway would make it today. So we will welcome him in the new year. Commissioner Phillips is excused this evening. So with that, we begin introductions. My name is Kim Allen. I represent South Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Jim Svensson, South Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Okay, and with that, we'll move on from to item B on the agenda, adoption of the agenda. Anyone have any changes or rearranging to do? Okay. Motion to adopt the agenda?
I move the agenda be adopted as presented.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed, passes unanimously. Moving on to item C, we have approval of the minutes from our last meeting back in September 24th, 2019. Do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
I'll move to approve them.
I'll second.
Any discussion, changes, edits to the minutes? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes, raise your hand. All those opposed? None opposed. Passes unanimously. Moving on to item D, we have general public comment on issues that are not on the agenda today, and I do not see anyone who would want to discuss anything with us. So with that, we will move on to item E, which are our work study, the 2019 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Update. We have Peter Best and Dave Ward at the table as staff to give us an overview of the many comprehensive plan amendments that we'll be grappling with over the next few months.
That's correct. Good evening. For the record, my name is Peter Best, Senior Planner, Long-Range Planning for DCD. I'll apologize now. I have a cold, so I'm hoping my voice will keep with me throughout the evening. So we had a work study session back in August where we covered four amendments. We'll continue from that tonight. And I'll go over kind of a refresher on the process we're in right now, the public consideration process for comprehensive plan amendments. I'll update you on some changes to the final docket that have been made by the board, update you on the schedule, because we have a new schedule now, and briefly talk about how we're managing these materials and make sure that's working for you, and if there's any ways we can improve that, we'd like to be able to do that for you. Then we'll get into the study session where we'll be looking at four. Very briefly, we'll be looking at a couple of revisions to our clarifying edits amendment and some revisions to the center's amendment. And then the bulk of the evening will be spent on the downtown Kingston amendment. That was the really thick part of your packet. And then we'll wrap up with the site-specific amendment at Dickey Pitt, which is in Silverdale. The applicant's here, and so we'll both be doing some presenting to you on that amendment. So just a refresher, our annual comprehensive plan amendment is kind of a four-phase process where we scope it out with the Board of Commissioners. They adopt a docket, and then we go from there to develop those amendments. And then once those are developed, and development might include citizen groups, it might just be developed by staff, it might be an application that came in, so there's various ways that development happens. And then we go into an analysis phase where we complete the SEPA review and prepare staff reports, and then we come to you like we are tonight to begin consideration. The consideration phase on the public side includes public open houses, which we're also hosting this week in all three commissioner districts. Study sessions with you, a public comment period, and a public hearing, which we'll have with you on January 7th. Once you are done with your deliberations and adopt findings of fact and your recommendations on the amendments, we will update our staff reports, draft the ordinance that goes along with the proposal as they stand at that time, and then go through a similar process with the Board of County Commissioners. They will also do study sessions, there'll be a second public comment period and a public hearing, and then they'll make a final decision, which we anticipate at this point to be in April. So the docket, the amendments are listed here on the left. As I mentioned previously, our clarifying edits amendment, we'll talk about a couple of revisions tonight. The mineral resource overlay zone cleanup, we studied that in August, and there's no changes to that at this point. Our centers amendment, designation of centers, we'll discuss a few revisions. The association and future incorporation of the Silverdale and Kingston UGAs, we discussed in August, and there's no further revisions to that at this point. Downtown Kingston was not originally on the docket because it was intended to just be some code changes, which can be processed independently of this comp plan process. But we added some policy cleanup to that, so it's now in the docket, and I'll explain a little bit more about how it's a continuation of the phase one amendments that you reviewed and recommended on last year, were adopted in 2018. The Dickey Pit site specific amendment, we got a revised proposal on that, and so we have given you materials tonight that represent what the proposal is and the SEPA documents, but the staff report is still in preparation, so that'll be coming out before the public hearing. And then we had another amendment that has been removed from the docket. That's the comprehensive plan amendment process, which is what we're executing right now. But it's the Chapter 2108 of Kitsap County Code. We had a work study on scoping out changes to that for workload and scheduling reasons. That was removed from the docket, but we do anticipate that that'll be coming in a matter of months out. For consideration. So, any questions about changes to the docket? Okay. So then our schedule. So we've done our first work study session in August, our second session tonight. Our public hearing is going to be January 7th, and we'll have time then to do additional work study if we need it following the hearing. The public comment period closes on the 8th, the day after that hearing. And then on the 21st, I'm hoping that we can complete deliberations and adopt the findings of fact and recommendations on that day. But as we get closer, we'll figure out if that's doable or not. And the full schedule with the board's meeting dates is in your packets as well. So for managing meeting materials, for some folks we've provided hard copy binders, and then others have said they'll just follow materials online. I'm not sure how that is working out for folks. Did with this last batch of materials, did you access it over the web? Yeah. No.
Amanda's giving me hard copies.
Okay. So you're doing hard copies. Okay. Besides the timing of the materials, which we talked about before the meeting started, are there any feedback about delivery of materials in either of those ways? Okay, great. So for discussion tonight, whether you're looking at hard copy or electronic, Everything is organized by binder tab number, so that'll keep everything organized, make sure we're all on the same material. And then in your packets, you saw that there's a new table of contents that reflects what's in the binder, but it also gives you a sense of what's coming in or going out of that binder as we update materials. And then as we go through tonight, staff reports all have version numbers, all attachments have header labels, all pages are dated and numbered. So if there's any question about what material we're talking about, we can use that to zero in on exactly, make sure we're all on the same page. Okay. So the First Amendment, the clarifying edits, just to recap, this includes limited text and map amendments that address kind of clarity and consistency in the code and the comprehensive plan. These are intended to be non-substantive and should not change the intent or interpretation of policies or regulations. So this is our kind of catch-all to just continually improve the clarity and consistency of code. This year we have 24 edits in this amendment, the recommendation is to adopt as proposed. What I'm going to do, since we work studied the rest of this in August, I'll just highlight what has been changed. So in Amendment 16, which adds the Silverdale Design Standards and the district map to the appendix of Title 17, based on feedback that I believe came from the commission, there were some clarifying edits there about some zones that had been renamed in 2016. So the references to Highway Tourist Commercial Zone has been changed to the commercial, renamed to commercial. And the regional commercial zone was renamed to regional center. So those references throughout the document have been updated. And references to the mixed use zone, which was removed in 2016, have been taken out. The rest remains unchanged. With Amendment 23, we've added the farm focus area maps, which are referenced in our ag code. We've added those in appendix to Title 17, so they're easier to find and reference, along with a lot of these amendments are about getting materials in a place where they're easy to find for folks. And then Amendment 23, there's no changes to those maps. We're just relocating them so that they're easy to find. Amendment 24 is to clarify that a notice of decision shall be provided by mail or electronic mail. Currently it's by mail, and so we've had an issue about our practice of emailing those. So this is to clean up, make code consistent with current modern practice. Any questions or comments about revisions?
I just want to thank you for removing the reference to mixed use. I'll sleep much better tonight.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Likewise, we want to thank you for the suggestion.
And that's a good point, that annually we intend to continue doing these clarifying edits. So any suggestions that you have that come up any time of day or night, we're happy to collect those and consider those for improvement. So the next amendment is the initial designation of centers in unincorporated Kitsap County. These changes are intended to be consistent with the new update of the regional centers framework that comes to us from the Puget Sound Regional Council. So in Vision 2040, which was the current and soon to be replaced regional growth plan, there was certain terms used for centers in that, and the whole plan is based around a centers framework. As they're updating that and soon to be adopted the Vision 2050 plan, they've changed some of the terminology and some of the categories for their centers framework. So this amendment is to try to keep us in consistency. I'll note that there will be necessary revisions to our countywide planning policies as well. So this, we've been discussing this amendment and what the cities are doing as well to maintain consistency. But there will be future amendments to the countywide planning policies to adopt centers and a local framework that would be consistent with what we're proposing in this unincorporated county amendment. So this is to designate centers of all types in our comprehensive plan, so regional growth centers being the largest and most significant, countywide centers being more locally designated through the countywide planning policy process, and then rural centers, which is within the domain of the county. And there's an update to an existing policy regarding military installations that's to update with the regional framework. And so the changes that have occurred here is in part just terminology. So in talking with our colleagues at the cities through the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, we've come to agreement that instead of the term rural town center, we're just going to use the term rural center. So that's mutually agreeable amongst the jurisdictions. And then we've added three rural centers. So we've added Keyport to the list, Port Gamble to the list, and then type 3 Lamberts, which, you know, it's more than, it's many locations. And there's attachment C1 in your packet, and the map shown here on the slide represents all those center locations. And like I mentioned, these are initial center designations, so there's future work to be done for some of these. And for the rural centers in particular, this is mostly about maintaining competitiveness for transportation funding through the regional funding process. Then on the military side, we've removed the Manchester facility. It doesn't meet the size requirements in the criteria. So there's under state law, there's a number of personnel that have to be employed to be a countywide military installation, and Manchester doesn't meet that criteria, so we're removing that. Any questions about centers?
The one thing that I would add to that is that the cities are also doing corresponding identification of centers within their boundaries.
Okay, so the main time tonight will be spent on Kingston. And this is you can tell by the size of the staff report, but this is a pretty sizable and far-reaching set of amendments. So it reaches into many different areas of code and the design standards in the Kingston sub-area plan. There is some very specific unifying themes to this, but once those get broken out into specific edits throughout the code, it can be hard to kind of continue to follow that. So what I'd like to do tonight to begin with is to just orient you to what the high-level themes are, the process that we went through to develop this with a citizens advisory group, get into a little bit more level of detail that's still organized thematically, and then walk through and highlight some of the specific amendments to point you to where in the document, that's the content that is related to this specific proposal, so that then when you sit down and read through it cover to cover, hopefully that will help organize everything for you. And as questions come up, we're happy to discuss that tonight. If you have comments or suggestions tonight, I'm happy to take those as well. But I would anticipate that probably this is one of the items we would want to work study a little bit more following the public hearing. So not a high expectation for all your detailed feedback tonight. So this is phase two of a process we've been going through. You might recall last year we did some policies and a few specific code changes that we considered phase one. So in 2018, the objective was to review the comprehensive plan policies and development regulations related to the Kingston Urban Village Center Zone, or the UVC zone, which is the the core of downtown, but doesn't comprise all of downtown Kingston. And from that, we began to work on policies, regulations, really quickly identified that we needed to break it up into phases. So I'll highlight what we did in phase one in a moment. And this phase two, as I mentioned earlier, was really originally just going to be code changes, but then we identified that there were some policies that needed some cleanup, that we were actually kind of completing what the policies were asking us to do, some reorganization of policies. So we brought back in the Kingston Subarea Plan, and that's why this got back on the docket. So so the scope of this amendment is kind of fourfold. It implements existing county policies calling for various reviews and updates regarding Kingston. So in the subarea plan, there's policies to update the design standards, to do various other things, implement and incorporate the Kingston Complete Streets plan that was completed in 2016. So those are in here. And then the work that we did with the Citizens Advisory Group was primarily focused on the second one, which was addressing barriers to achieving the existing vision for downtown Kingston. So there's a well-articulated vision for a pedestrian-oriented downtown in Kingston, but there really hasn't been development in the last decade or more in downtown Kingston. And we heard a lot of feedback about how our code was preventing folks from being able to build to the vision that's there. And so we were very careful to make sure we weren't modifying the vision for Kingston, but really identifying and then addressing those barriers that we heard about. And I'll articulate what those barriers were. Some of the staff work was really focused around consistency with the regional and countywide planning policies. So I'll bring back in some of the regional planning from Puget Sound Regional Council related to that. And then, as we typically want to do, so while we're cracking this open, we want to improve clarity, consistency, and our administration of the code. So a lot of the staff, additional staff recommendations that were in this amendment were around clarity and consistency in the administration.
When you're talking about the Kingston Advisory Group, is it the same as the community council, or is this a separate stakeholders group?
It's a different group. So let me introduce you to that group. So it was appointed by Commissioner Gelder. There are 10 members representing. There was the chair of the Kingston Citizens Advisory Council, some other citizens on that. I believe there were four developers of different types of projects, local downtown business owners, the Port of Kingston was there, tourism and trade representative was there. So it was a pretty good representative group of folks. We supported it with two staff, and over the 2 years we're working, they had 15 meetings to work on these amendments. And in your packet, there's a list of their names and kind of their backgrounds as well. So like I said, their primary objective was to identify and prioritize barriers to achieving that vision for downtown Kingston. And so we looked at kind of three categories for those types of barriers. Obviously, policy and regulation was what our wheelhouse was really focused on. But that alone is not fully informative of what we needed to work on. So we also looked at market issues and infrastructure issues associated with Kingston. And there's a long laundry list of those things that's in your packet and the staff report, but the key issues are listed here. So on the market side, downtown Kingston was platted a long time ago, very small lots. Many of them, most of them, are underdeveloped. There's a lot of dirt parking lots for ferry commuters and that sort of thing in downtown. And ownership is very highly fragmented. So I might get the numbers a little bit off, but there's something like 128 parcels just in the UVC zone alone, represented by 99 owners. So there's not a lot of consolidated ownership. And that provides valuable context for what kind of codes can be implemented in downtown Kingston. There's also existing commercial vacancies, and business investment is really waiting for more population, is what we heard from the business community. So that relates to some of the requirements around commercial and mixed-use development downtown, and that was a barrier requiring people to build more commercial space when there isn't a market for it was an issue. And then housing supply in downtown was stagnant and even shrinking. So that population didn't have a place to go. And so prices were rising because demand is still increasing. And there's demand for more of a diversity of housing options. And our code created some limitations to some of those types of options that we discussed and are included in the proposal. And as you know, Kingston now has ferry connection to two significant employment centers, to downtown Edmonds and to downtown Seattle, and to the regional transportation connections that are at the other end of those ferries. So there is a lot of demand and interest in housing in Kingston. And on the infrastructure side, there's limited existing frontage improvements in downtown Kingston. So there's sidewalks on Main Street, few sidewalks elsewhere, but not many. And so there's a significant cost there to developers, and there was uncertainty associated with that as well for how code was currently written. And the lack of pedestrian connectivity also creates issues for development. And then finally, there's no existing improvement district or downtown parking management program in Kingston. Parking is a historically popular theme in Kingston with the ferry and downtown businesses. There's been numerous kind of parking studies done formally and officially and informally by folks. And in your packet are two of those and some additional information on parking in Kingston. The short answer is there's not a lack of parking in Kingston. There's a lack of management of parking in Kingston is kind of the bottom line. And so that helps inform some of the, I think, is creative approaches to parking in a high-capacity transit area with the ferry. And it doesn't establish a parking management program or a district, but hopefully there's the groundwork in some of these amendments to support that moving forward, should that get structured and initiated.
So the study found that there's adequate commuter parking for the folks that ride the ferry in downtown Kingston?
And for downtown activities and for the business district generally. Now, the management of that parking is a whole other issue. So that as kind of context, that helped inform and frame the kind of policy and regulatory revisions that were proposed.
Peter, you can decide the timing of where this question gets placed, but what is or isn't the role of the port and the location and amount of parcel square footage that they have and their ability to partner, develop, not develop? What has that looked like for you guys thus far?
Right. So what we've tried to do with this is build the opportunity for whoever it is, whether it's the park, or I'm sorry, the port, whether it's the county or whether it's some business improvement district or local improvement district or some type of entity that's created, to then be able to implement a parking program and development continue to occur as that transition happens. So I can't answer who's going to manage parking or when it's going to happen. But with these amendments, we've tried to lay the groundwork for that transition to be able to happen and development to continue to occur as that happens. I know folks look at the port as a real likely entity to manage that, but that's a process beyond us in this amendment as to setting up that type of framework or the structure and implementing it.
Yeah, I understand that it's not in the context of tonight's activity. So okay.
So the work group identified three barriers in the policy bucket, and this is what we focused on last year in the phase one amendments. So the mixed use requirement was a big one, and what that was is across the entire urban village center zone, which is the core of downtown, all development had to be mixed use. You couldn't do a commercial-only project. You couldn't do a residential-only project. It had to be mixed use. In a community where there's already vacant commercial space and not a lot of interest in developing more commercial space, that created a real limitation on folks. There was a bit of flexibility in the code that allowed the development to utilize that space for residential use initially. But you had to provide the parking to commercial levels and construct to commercial standards and have a plan for how that could be converted to commercial use. And while for maybe parts of downtown that type of approach could make sense for the long-term kind of protection of a commercial area, for the outer areas of the urban village zone that extend up the hill, which is completely dominated by residential uses now, that really puts a significant barrier to development. So that was adopted in 2018, removing that mixed-use requirement. So today you can do a residential-only project or a commercial-only project or a mixed-use project.
So are you looking to redraw the boundaries for that zone? That overlay?
No. Okay. No. We'll get to one of the proposals that brings back that idea a little bit, but for a very small portion of downtown. And we'll see how people react to it. The second kind of emphasis, and this is a significant driver for the work group, was that, kind of residential first. We need more residential units in downtown with population to create the demand to support additional commercial uses. And in order to be a pedestrian downtown, you have to have people who are there to be pedestrians, right? And you need the places that they're going to walk to. But it's from the perspective of the work group, and the department agrees with this, it starts with the housing units and getting people downtown. And then the third issue is parking. And parking kind of spans a variety of different things. In phase one, this was really around clarifying and emphasizing some flexibility around parking for downtown Kingston. It is somewhat unique in that it has large supply of publicly available parking. Not all geographies have that. And it's right there with the ferry terminal. So you'll see that we've tried to utilize that flexibility that the policy changes in 2018 provided to bring us into kind of a new era in Kitsap County. So then for the regulatory side, which is really what we're focusing on for phase two, there was a long laundry list of barriers. So one was there were restrictions on certain types of residential uses, limited housing options. So for example, detached single-family residences were prohibited. This was a bit of a controversy to debate about, should a downtown have single-family residences? And the work group landed on the side of, as long as they're built to minimum density, it should be an allowed use. Let the market decide what's allowed or what would be built. Additionally, accessory dwelling dwellings and both what we currently define as accessory dwelling units, which are detached, and accessory living quarters, which are internally or attached to the main dwelling. Those are prohibited in downtown. And the discussion here, and we'll get into this in several other categories as well, was Kingston's going to have to transition from a smaller town with single-family residences right downtown to something more urban, consistent with the vision that's there. And we have to provide the mechanisms to allow that transition to happen. We're not going to flip switches and just all of a sudden go from single-family residences to mixed-use developments. Communities transition evolve over time. And so allowing accessory dwelling units, allowing guest quarters with businesses, and some of the other changes we made to the design standards to allow the continued use of buildings and the transitional use of buildings over time to the work group was far more realistic to facilitating the vision for Kingston.
Can I just
yes,
ask a clarifying maybe. Question? I found a figure.
Yes.
When you talk about Kingston downtown, are you talking about just the blue area or all the colored areas or?
It's an excellent question.
Really
thank you.
Different figure.
So it's really all three of those areas.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
And those are the three design districts. That, and just a little bit of background. So there was an urban design study done in the 90s, late 90s, I believe, for downtown that then the design standards evolved out of. And so those are the three design districts and what they defined as downtown.
Thank you.
So the third residential use category was just around unconventional housing options. So in addition to what we've talked about, boarding houses, just having bedrooms for rent, having those as allowed uses within the downtown would provide a lot more options. And then non-residential use restrictions, particularly for downtown, when we looked through the use table for commercial and institutional types of uses, it struck the work group that there were just some that you might naturally think of in a downtown area that were prohibited. So there's some amendments related to that. And then this one, I'm not sure how this all originated, but Kingston had two sets of design standards that they had to meet. And there was conflict between them. And historically, there was a lack of certainty about which were in effect when. So this was a big driver originally for this project, was just to clean that up, get rid of the redundant stuff, address the conflicts, and organize things and make them available and clearly understood what applied and where. And then the applicability of the design standards is this next one. So the original design standards could be interpreted as applicable to everything. Every little remodel, every change of use could require 100% compliance with the design standards. And that was seen as a real barrier to lots of folks, particularly around this idea of transitional use of existing buildings. So we've clarified how remodels and additions and changes of use would be addressed. Then maximum building height was another. Most of the building heights in downtown and even in the surrounding residential zones is 45 feet. But in parts of the UVC zone itself, the design standards dropped that down to 35 feet. And there was a lot of debate in the work group around this, around views was an issue. But there are proposals to increase maximum building heights in this amendment. And then parking requirements. So there was on-site parking requirements that were seen as barriers, particularly with the small lot sizes and the fragmented ownership. Hard to build something, provide the landscaping, provide the parking, and to do that on a postage stamp of a parcel. And if you're going to put it underground or in the structure, have that all pencil, right? So there's just the basic economics of development that prevented a lot of lots being considered for development. Then off-site parking, there were some limitations to that as well. So there's around both of those categories, as well as on-street parking, there are proposals in the amendment. So this is the core of the barriers that they saw, and so the kind of the themes that continue throughout all of the detailed amendments. So just a little bit more about how the work group worked, and then how the department came in with some additional recommendations. So a lot of the work group's recommendations come from comparable analysis with other communities. So we looked at some local communities like Bainbridge Island and Paulsbo that the work group thought were relatively comparable, as well as some others outside of the county. So Friday Harbor, LeConnor, Steilacoom, and Clinton were some of the other communities selected. We see a lot of ferry communities there, or communities that are in have a significant transportation component but are smaller in character and have a strong identity that Kingston really feels it has and wants to maintain. The work group, their original charter was only focused on the UVC zone, and they maintained consistency to that charter throughout their work. So while our discussions led to a lot of reflection on the broader downtown area, their recommendations were specific to the UVC. Given the discussions we had with them and kind of the applicability of the solutions to the broader downtown, and that downtown, all of downtown kind of faced the same issues, the department expanded a lot of those recommendations to more of the downtown. I guess one other thing, and when we look at some maps, we'll see this more plainly, that the planning boundaries don't necessarily align well in downtown Kingston. So we have our zone boundaries, and then we have the design districts that cut through most of those zones. And so you may end up having questions related to that, and the work group certainly did, and we tried to improve our maps over time to make that more clear. So if you do have questions about that, that's an expected thing, I think, for Kingston. And then the department's recommendations are mostly additive to the work group. So like I said, expanding that to the broader downtown. But we also include some modifications and alternatives in there. So how we've tried to propose this to you is we've struck out some of their recommendations. We've tried to make that clear for you so that you can see that what is not struck out is the final proposal from the department. Also to try to clarify where, in many cases, we're just trying to achieve the same ends, but slightly with different wording or maybe with slightly different means. You'll see boxes in the proposal that have a work group recommendation and then a department recommendation, so that you can see those directly comparative to each other. The department is recommending DCD's language for adoption, but we wanted to be respectful of the work group and make sure that all of their work was reflected in there so that you can see that. The department also incorporated some of that regional and countywide work that we've mentioned, and the kind of clarity, consistency, administration issues. So you'll see a lot of one word and phrase edits throughout all of the design standards, for example, and that's almost all of that is this last category of trying to maintain clarity and consistency and improve administration. So for the amendments, we'll break this down into kind of three big categories. So the first is the Kingston Subarea Plan. And the focus of this is really around reorganizing, updating, and retiring goals and policies that are relevant to the changes that we're making here. So we've implemented some of the policies that say review this or update this, so we can retire those at this point. Reorganizing some so that they're flow a little bit more clearly for the reader, and updating some so that we're moving from update this to monitor and adapt over time as examples. And then in Kitsap County Code, there's the redundant design, dealing with the redundant design standards. So we've repealed what's redundant in where there's conflicts, kind of decided on what to do with the conflicts, and where there's some content that's unique that should remain, and reorganize that a bit so it's more clearly in the place where it needs to be applied. The second one here is around defining a high-capacity transit station area for the Kingston Ferry. So this is coming directly from the Puget Sound Regional Council and their planning assumptions. So Kingston is being designated a high-capacity transit community because of the ferry. And the station area is a walk shed of a half mile from the station or from the ferry terminal. And there's implications for, you know, parking relative to that, that you need less parking when you're close to high-capacity transit. And it's very compatible with the existing vision for pedestrian-oriented downtown. So there's no changes as far as density or the vision or how the general architecture of buildings and capacity would be in the district. So this is really for Kingston more about parking than anything else. In some other location, there might be other issues around density and those sorts of things, but for Kingston, it's really around parking.
Yeah, so with this designation, you know, in Vision 2040, you get the designation of the urban center, and there are a lot of funding opportunities that grant funding and such that goes with that. Is this a similar type of a thing?
The station area, I'm not so sure about the high-capacity transit. As a high-capacity transit community, absolutely.
Okay.
The station area, I think, is more of a detailed implementation piece. Yeah. So there is a whole new set of parking standards in the proposal here for high-capacity transit station areas. And so while this only applies to Kingston today, this could be utilized elsewhere in the county as high-capacity transit comes online. So thinking like bus rapid transit, Kitsap Transit currently has long-range plans to do, but are not currently available. And other passenger-only ferry service potentially in the future. And then we also updated allowed uses in the UVC zone, as we briefly discussed before. So those are changes to county code. And then more specifically, the design standards are in the code, but I wanted to break this out more specifically. So it's not a total rewrite of the design standards, but there are quite a few changes. So clarity in administration as well as consistency are important things throughout the applicability of the design standards. So to when you do remodels or additions, and what types of development it applies to, so like single family residences. Incorporation of the Kingston Complete Streets Plan. You'll see edits all throughout the design standards related to the Kingston Complete Streets Plan, mostly just referencing the plan appropriately. There is a new proposal in here to designate pedestrian-oriented commercial street frontages. And I mentioned earlier that you had to have this mixed-use requirement throughout all of the UVC zone. This would be just for a portion of downtown, and we'll look at a map for this. The work group specifically recommended against doing this. They really felt just let the market will do a good job of deciding. The department, I think, isn't quite as comfortable with that idea. So this is one we really want to highlight for public feedback, you know, how the Kingston community feels about this. But the proposal here is that you could initially occupy as residential use, but it would be built to commercial standards and for conversion to commercial use for a small portion of downtown.
Will you get into where that is?
Yes.
On a map?
Yeah.
And is it possible to just get rid of the word commercial? Because I don't think they would disagree about pedestrian oriented.
Okay. Since we're here, why don't I just jump to that really quick? So this is it's attachment A, exhibit 1, if you want to find this in your own packet. And if you're following digitally, everything is bookmarked here as well in these PDFs. So it's in the appendices to the design standards. So those, so around Main Street and the branching streets, just around that core area is what we'd be we're proposing for designation.
So this is the area where you would require mixed use?
Where the first floor street frontage would be need to be built to commercial standards and for eventual conversion to commercial use. And the language, when we get to it, the language in the design standards is intentionally fairly vague, so that to provide a lot of flexibility there.
Yeah, because I was going to say the next question is, what's the definition of commercial standards?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So then another proposal is to formally designate alleys, a system of alleys in Kingston. Alleys exist in many parts of the UVC zone. Some are not complete anymore because they've been vacated or portions have been vacated. But this implements an existing existing policies and standards in the design districts. There is currently a preference, a very strong preference for alley loading, but the implementation mechanisms for that weren't very clear. So this is intended to provide some clarity around implementation. And I'll show you those as well. We've added some more off-site flexibility for open space and landscaping requirements. So again, thinking about very small lots, 15% landscaping ends up being can be a very kind of minuscule, thing pushed to the side and not really providing its true purpose, fulfilling its true purpose. So complementary to what we've done around some flexibility for off-site parking, we're proposing off-site landscaping, off-site open space, with the idea that in proximity to where the development occurs, you could consolidate some of those requirements and create pocket parks and larger landscaped areas that provide benefit to downtown.
I think that probably from a development standpoint also could facilitate parcel partnering, which
Right.
would help with fragmentation.
Yep. Great. So we've also incentivized alternatives to surface parking. So trying to incentivize putting parking underground, under building, off-site, in more centralized parking structures. So that's where partners like the port or others could become involved. And then there's some proposals to be able to count some on-street parking towards commercial parking requirements.
What's the water table like there? I mean, you know, you can try to incentivize underground parking, but being so close to, you know, to the water, just in my experience, that sometimes it's just not feasible.
Right. That, I don't have a detailed answer for you. I do know that there have been proposals for underground parking. I'm not sure any has been built in Kingston.
Yeah, I feel like it climbs kind of out of the ground quicker than like Old Town Silverdale, for example.
Well, and I just anecdotally, downtown Redmond, where I came from, the water table is very high in downtown Redmond, and so they found that people that needed or were required to do underground parking had to essentially create like a bathtub for the parking structure to sit in, so that it wouldn't displace too much of the water table. It became very complicated to do that, and so I like incentivize as opposed to require, but also to set expectations reasonably, right, too.
Yeah, in all of the provisions, it kind of addresses as a group, underground, understructure, and offsite. So you can do any of those in the provisions. Yeah. Yeah. So the next one is to allow building heights, particularly in two of the design districts, the Old Town Waterfront District and the Lindbaugh Commercial District, to increase from 35 feet to 45 feet. And as I mentioned earlier, the surrounding areas are predominantly 45 feet around those locations, so brings it up in parity. And then the final category here is to repeal. There's a required palette of exterior building colors.
That's a very good idea.
And so, yeah, there's still some language about style, but to require the formal palette color is in the proposal. So with that, would this be a good time to take a short break, or yep, you want to keep going?
If anyone needs one, do you want to keep going? And I'm mindful, okay, Peter, of your okay voice and everything. If you,
yeah,
need a break, let me
take
know.
A voice break.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So, so if I could, so, well, I guess I should ask. What I would like to do next is to get in and walk you through where some of these things are specifically in the codes or in the proposal, so that you can see where they're at and see the language that's there. This was all to kind of cover the high overview and then kind of the middle level overview of the themes of what we're working on here. Are there questions at this point before we get too in the weeds?
Yeah. Has the proposal been submitted back to the advisory committee at this point, or is... And so the feedback, other than the one element you said, you know, pedestrian in the commercial areas was an issue. Any other big issues?
Right. So to date, we've only gotten feedback from one member of the work group, and a lot of that was clarifying. And so I feel like we addressed a lot of his questions through clarification. We did revise one of the policies that is. You have the revised version now before you that, based on kind of the firsthand knowledge, we were misreading some of the intent of the policy we were revising, and so we were able to kind of correct that and bring back some of the original intent that was there. So we really appreciated that feedback.
How long have they had it at this revision, the work group, and then do they also have a deadline for response?
So their deadline is the same public comment deadline as
okay,
everybody. Mm-hmm. They've had it now, I can't remember exactly, but around 2 weeks.
Okay.
So what they've had. Yeah. So, and they'll, some of those folks will be at our open house.
We need a 5-minute break.
Up in Kingston to help answer questions and talk with fellow residents of Kingston about the proposal.
Okay. Yeah, I'll ask for the 5 minutes before
okay
we get in the weeds.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, Commissioner Murphy wants a 5-minute break, and
okay,
so we'll take that.
You don't have to blame it on me, but
I'll take it.
I'll own it.
That's the end of the bus.